Coming up next, why are Göbekli Tepe and the Giza pyramids aligned with the constellation of Cygnus? And just who were the Denisovans? Why are they important to us? What level of achievement did they reach? Why did they advance so quickly? Andrew Collins is next, and he'll answer these questions on Coast to Coast AM. Andrew Collins is a writer and historian living in the United Kingdom. He is the author of more than a dozen books that challenge the way we perceive the past. In 2008, Andrew and colleague Nigel Skinner Simpson discovered a previously unrecorded cave complex beneath the pyramids of Giza, which has brought him worldwide acclaim. Andrew's new book, Atlantis and the Caribbean, pins down the source of Plato's Atlantis to the Caribbean island of Cuba and the Bahaman archipelago. His latest book is called The Cygnus Key, The Denisovan Legacy, Göbekli Tepe, and the Birth of Egypt. Andrew Collins, welcome back to Coast AM. How are you?
Yeah, I'm fine. Yes. Nice to be back.
Great to have you back.
Yeah, there's so many questions, so many mysteries involved with this. I mean, we've got Göbekli Tepe, who are the Denisovans? How are they linked with the Great Pyramid? How are they linked with the foundation to civilization? It all seems a bit far-fetched. But until recently, the main ideas about the foundation to civilization is either that it was a slow evolutionary process across many thousands of years, or perhaps that survivors from a previous lost civilization had given us, the rudiments of civilization, perhaps from ancient Atlantis, when it sank. Or obviously the other train of thought is that, aliens were involved, that just maybe ancient astronauts, ancient aliens came down here, and gifted us, the technologies and the ideas, the culture that allowed the rise of civilization. But we've now got, an extra possible explanation of how civilization came about. And that is that it could have been handed to us by one of the types of what they call archaic humans that existed and thrived on this earth before our own ancestors, that's anatomical modern humans or Homo sapiens, actually came out of Africa and covered the Eurasian continent. Now, there are two main candidates of the so-called archaic humans. One is the Neanderthals, and they were actually incredibly advanced. I mean, people think that, they were brutish, that they lived in caves and, had barely had any kind of technology and understanding of life. But actually, they were incredibly intelligent. But even more advanced than them were the so-called Denisovans. And we've only known about their existence since 2010. And they covered an area from the area of Central Asia all the way across to Eastern Asia, Southern Asia, Southeast Asia. And they made their way also across into the Americas, North and South America. And they thrived, from anything from about 700,000 years ago down to their disappearance about 40,000 years ago. And the main evidence that we have of their existence, certainly as far as fossil remains and technology and artifacts from them, comes from a place called the Denisova Cave. And this is in the Altai Mountains of southern Siberia. And here archaeologists have been working for several decades trying to uncover different levels of human activity, both modern humans and more ancient activities, going back for at least probably 200,000 to 300,000 years. And what they found is that about 60,000 to 70,000 years ago, the Denisovans were here and they had the most incredible high culture. They were producing jewelry that was incredible, the so-called Denisovan bracelet, which, some of your listeners might want to look up if they've not seen it. It was made of this beautiful green stone known as chlorite, And it was highly polished. It has a hole in it that is drilled. And the examining this this hole shows that it was done so fast that it must have been done with a modern-style drill. Now, it doesn't mean they had electric drills, but they certainly had the means to cut holes very fast.
Where are they? You mentioned the skeletal, Andrew. You mentioned skeletal remains and so forth. What about evidence for these tools? I mean, where are the tools?
Well, there are literally hundreds, if not thousands, of tools that have been found in the Denisova cave and in various other places that match those that were found inside the Denisova cave. And what they tell us is that the Denisovans created the toolkit that would become the mainstay of us modern humans from about 40 to 50,000 years ago, right the way down to the Bronze Age. And we can track the path that these tools took after coming out of the area of southern Siberia, going into southern Asia, eastern Asia, and westwards into Europe as well, and into southwest Asia, and down into the very area of Göbekli Tepe in southeast Turkey, what is today southeast Turkey. So we can see the influence that the Denisovans had, the impact that they had upon the very foundations of civilization. And once you start realizing this, you start asking the question, what was their impact on places like, you know, dynastic Egypt, on Göbekli Tepe, and on many other cultures around the world, like the Indus Valley culture, or in China, or in Southeast Asia.
Were the Denisovans, were they the giants of legend?
Well, that's a very interesting point, because although the only confirmed human remains of the Denisovans have been found within the Denisova cave in southern Siberia, they match various other fossil remains that have been found, you know, teeth, jaw bones, things like this, that have been found in various other parts, mostly in eastern Asia. And these are of incredibly large size. In fact, the teeth that were found in the Denisova cave were so large that they were initially dismissed as those of the cave bear. And all of the information that we have is suggesting that they were of enormous size. And what I mean by that is that they could have been anything up to about 7 to 7.5 feet tall and were massive, built like wrestlers. This seems to have been, you know, the evidence that's coming out from the fossil remains and from what we can see about their own ancestry, because they were linked with an even earlier type of archaic human who were known as Homo heidelbergensis. And these covered large areas of the Eurasian continent and were also in Africa as well. And when their bones are found, they regularly suggest that the individuals were up to 7 to 7.5 feet tall. So, you know, there's no question that the Denisovans were of massive size. So therefore, I think we should start looking at the myths and legends relating to the giants as coming not just from the Denisovans, but also their early hybrids, because that's where it starts becoming interesting, because it's very clear that the Denisovans interbred with modern humans. There are a number of populations around the world, mostly in eastern Asia, southern Asia, southeast Asia, and even in amongst the indigenous peoples of Australia, that have Denisovan ancestry, so that we know that the descendants, the hybrid descendants of the Denisovans, reached right the way across the continent. But more importantly, they also got into the Americas as well, where, of course, we have all of the stories relating to the giant skeletons that were found in literally hundreds of different Native American mound sites across the United States.
In what other way, Andrew? Sorry. In what other ways, Andrew, were the Denisovans technologically advanced? You mentioned, you know, they had drills and they made intricate jewelry. What other types of technology did they likely have?
Well, it looks like they created amongst the earliest musical instruments in the form of a bone flute or whistle that was discovered in the Denisovan level, in the Denisova cave. They also produced the earliest bone needles, you know, with eye holes at one end, meaning that they had tailored clothing. And this was the earliest evidence that we've got for this anywhere in the world. And this is probably about 50,000 years ago, arguably even earlier than that. They also rode around on horses. It has been speculated from the discovery of horse DNA and bones inside the Denisova cave that they may well have domesticated and even ridden horses. And that's very, very interesting because officially we didn't start riding horses until the Bronze Age, probably about 3,000 to 4,000 BC. But here's evidence that the Denisovans, you know, were wearing tailored clothing, they had beautiful jewellery, they were making sophisticated stone tools, and, you know, they were in tailored clothing, had musical instruments. You know, as early as not just 50,000, but some of the evidence goes back to 60 to 70,000 years ago. So they had an incredibly high culture. But on top of that, we find that the genes, the genetic background of the Denisovans is highly significant as well, because they have two specific genes that are linked in modern humans with autism. Now, autism is something which, we have certain perceptions of today. But, of course, what comes with that are so-called savant-like qualities, which can, you know, produce the most extraordinary abilities, everything from calendar counting to being able to memorize pieces of music or landscapes or forms instantaneously and being able to replicate these, and being able to do mathematical calculations in the head, which anybody else wouldn't even dream of. You know, I mean, one autistic person, can count pi, the decimal places up to, you know, thousands of points. I mean, just extraordinary. And the importance of this is that it tells us that the Denisovans may well have been using these similar abilities before their disappearance about 40,000 years ago. And this is very important because what we find is in the same region of southern Siberia is that shortly after this time, the earliest modern humans that build their societies there have these this extraordinary knowledge of celestial bodies and their movement around the skies, the eclipses of the sun and the moon. And they incorporate these onto bone plaques, which show a knowledge of number counting that goes into the, you know, not just the hundreds, but the thousands and tens of thousands, and relates to numbers, which later crop up in sacred architecture and in sacred literature around the world, in places like China, in Cambodia, Borobudur in Java, in Mesopotamia, in India. Numbers that involve that crop up again and again, 108, 54, 216, 432. And these exist as early as 24,000 years ago in the very same area that the Denisovans and the Denisovan hybrids must have existed. Now, did this knowledge of this counting of these celestial cycles come from the Denisovans themselves? I think the answer is yes.
Well, I'm wondering when the Denisovans encountered less technological or less advanced civilizations, more primitive cultures. The Denisovans must have been likened to gods.
It's difficult. It's difficult to know. I mean, you know, what happened when we first encountered them? Obviously, we'd been gradually moving in waves out of Africa certainly from about 200,000 years ago. But the earliest evidence that we've got of interbreeding between modern humans and Denisovans is probably about 50,000 years ago. And this As to where this took place, this is a matter of dispute. Some people believe that it was in Southeast Asia, where there's quite high levels of Denisovan DNA in modern populations, places like Papua New Guinea or even in Australia. But it seems more likely that they first encountered Denisovans as they crossed over from Central Asia into the likes of southern Siberia and came across the Denisovans who would have been in the area of the Altai Mountains, who'd existed there for tens of thousands, possibly even hundreds of thousands of years. And what they would have seen are these incredibly tall figures that would have looked almost like trees, which is very strange, actually, because there's a lot of accounts in mythology about individuals being, you know, at the height of trees. Even the so-called Watchers and Nephilim of
right.
the Book of Enoch are described
right.
as looking like trees. And, I mean, I would think that there was probably some kind of standoff between the two sides initially. But I think that the Denisovans themselves would have realized that their time was up as more and more of these modern humans turned up, you know, and tried to take over their territories. And, of course, you know, the Denisovans would have said to themselves, well, what can we do? And I think that one of the possibilities is that they actually allowed the interbreeding to take place because they knew that their legacy would continue on long after they disappeared in the descendants of themselves, the hybrid descendants, who, remember, continue to exist to this day in many parts of the world.
Do we have Denisovan DNA in us today? Can we determine that?
Yeah, we can. Yeah, I mean, you know, there are many of these DNA testing kits that will tell you whether you have the DNA of so-called archaic humans. You'll have to check to make sure that they do, you know, do this. I mean, some of them do, some of them don't.
But a quick question before we're coming up on a break here, Andrew. A quick question before we go into the break. When Joshua sent his spies into Canaan, and they came back with reports of giants in the Old Testament. Were they Denisovans?
Well, they certainly wouldn't have been Denisovans, no, but they may well have had some Denisovan DNA, yes, absolutely. There's every reason to suspect that. I think that the giants of old is a memory of the Denisovans and the Denisovan hybrids that followed them.
And where did the Denisovans get their technology from? Where did they get their knowledge from?
I think it was something that they created over an extremely long period of time, possibly many hundreds of thousands of years. But I think that this combined with an extremely different type of mindset, one that was partly autistic based. And I don't think we can see them in terms of autistic people on the autistic spectrum that we do today, because in some ways we've got a bit of a warped idea of, you know, how autistic people are represented in society. But if these people had these abilities and used them all the time, for them it would have been the norm.
All right, Andrew, I got to take a time out. Hold on, we'll get back to you and delve into this fascinating advanced civilization, the Denisovans, that existed perhaps hundreds of thousands of years ago. Forget Atlantis. This is way before Atlantis. Here's Frank Turner taking us into the break with The Way I Tend to Be. Hey, he used to study alongside Prince William at Eton College. Back with more on Coast to Coast AM. Our guest in the first 2 hours, Bill Falloon, may live long enough to see this sort of dystopian vision of the future. Imagine packs of robot dogs riding around in driverless vans that might be deployed to drop packages at your doorstep. That's right, your next package could be delivered by a robot dog. A German automotive firm, Continental, unveiled a concept delivery system at the Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas that imagines four-legged robot dogs hopping out of driverless delivery vans to ferry packages straight to your doorstep. Continental partnered with robotics company Anybotics, known for its quadrupedal robots that can open doors and ride elevators, to develop the concept. You can read more about this in the news section up at coasttocoastam.com. George Norrie is coming back to the historic Everett Theater in beautiful Everett, Washington, Saturday, March the 23rd, and that's happening 5 to 8 p.m. Get a load of this lineup of great guests. Director of National UFO Reporting, Peter Davenport. Esoteric researcher, Johnny Enoch. Afterlife expert and near-death experiencer, who has been officially dead for over 28 minutes after being hit by lightning, Danyon Brinkley. And an expert on mysticism, prophecy, and the occult, rogue scholar Joan Hoag. John Hoag, he's one of my favorites. There'll be a live band, audience participation, and of course, a meet and greet to follow. This is an event you don't want to miss. Let me repeat, it's happening at the historic Everett Theater, Everett, Washington, Saturday, March the 23rd, from 5 to 8 p.m. If you want to get your tickets now, just go to coasttocoastam.com, go to the George Events section of the website, or take this number down. You can call and order your tickets at 425-258-6766. Again, 425-258-6766. Back with more of my conversation with Andrew Collins as we discuss the Denisovans and the Cygnus Key right here on Coast to Coast AM. And we are back with Andrew Collins, writer, historian, and the author of The Cygnus Key, The Denisovan Legacy, Göbekli Tepe, and the Birth of Egypt. Getting back to the Denisovans and their advanced culture. And I'm wondering, over the span of hundreds of thousands of years where they developed their knowledge and their technology, they must have had to, therefore, have survived cataclysmic events, maybe things like even pole shifts. How did they survive that?
Well, it seems as if their genes give us the answers, because it would seem that they had genes that related very specifically to existing in extremely cold conditions, and that those genes have been passed on to the Inuit people of Greenland, and most likely in the area of Arctic Canada as well. But also, they had genes that allowed them to exist, like the Sherpas and Tibetans of today, on extremely high environments, elevated places like the Tibetan Plateau. And indeed, just recently, evidence of stone tools, thousands of stone tools have been found, dating to about 30 to 40,000 years ago, that match exactly those of the Denisova Cave in the Altay Mountains of Siberia, where we know that the Denisovans were. So it seems extremely likely that the Denisovans were on the Tibetan Plateau in the area very close to, obviously, where eventually rises, Tibetan Buddhism and cultures that have traditions that go back many, many thousands of years, and strangely enough talk about the forerunners of humans actually being these giants that existed on the Tibetan Plateau. And I, would be speculating, because this is brand new information, that these memories that are actually recorded within these ancient Tibetan texts actually refer to the Denisovans and their hybrids that actually existed on the Tibetan Plateau. But yes, elsewhere, they would have had to have survived the most extraordinary cataclysms. I mean, not just the most obvious ice ages, which would have had changes in the flora and the fauna over tens of thousands of years. It would have swayed between extremely cold to obviously the environment warming up, then going back to cold. But also cataclysms, not just volcanoes, earthquakes, tsunamis, but very possibly cosmic events. Comet impacts that would have had an incredible effect upon evolution. And they survived all of this all the way down to about 40,000 years ago, when we turn up, certainly in South Siberia, and we encounter them, we interbreed with them, and we then continue our journey eastwards towards places like China, Vietnam, Cambodia, and of course Southeast Asia, in areas like Papua New Guinea, and eventually Australia, because there is every evidence that either the Denisovans or their hybrids reached Australia And that this is the reason why the indigenous peoples today there still have as much as 5 to 6% of their DNA actually from the Denisovans themselves.
Andrew, there are two groups of people I'm thinking this information may not sit well with. One is sort of the Orthodox archaeologists and anthropologists, because this doesn't fit the narrative in terms of the evolution of modern man and so forth. There's tenure at stake. There are textbooks that need to be rewritten. So that's one group. The other group would be the adherents of the ancient alien theory, that mankind has reached its level of technology and cosmology and so forth because of alien intervention. Are you finding that you're angering both of those camps?
No, not at all. The information that's in my books comes from archaeology and from genetic research, genetic anthropology. This is what they're telling us. You know, this is coming out in regular press releases since 2010, and obviously backed up with academic papers as far as what the Denisovans achieved, where they were, how they interbred with us, their levels of technology. Yeah, none of this is any doubt. And as far as the ancient alien hypothesis is concerned, I mean, I'm a regular contributor to Ancient Aliens, the TV show. I have great sympathies for these ideas. And in my opinion, it's very likely that the very strange mindset of the Denisovans allowed them to connect with non-terrestrial entities that perhaps provided some of the rudiments of the earliest cosmologies and creation ideas that we probably find eventually in things like Tibetan Buddhism and in other traditions within Southeast and Eastern Asia, in China, within other sort of Hindu traditions and stuff like that. But a lot of these ideas could have come from non-terrestrial contact. Now, whether this also involved, the physical aliens coming down here, that's something I obviously cannot answer at this time. But it remains a possibility, an absolute possibility. But the impact of that on the Denisovans is another matter.
Now, when I think of ancient sites, sacred sites, like the pyramids, I always think of them in relationship to Orion. We always hear, oh, they're aligned to Orion. They're aligned to this constellation. That I've never heard about the Cygnus constellation until I picked up your book. What is the Cygnus constellation? Where is it?
Well, the Cygnus constellation is Cygnus means swan. It's the celestial swan in the sky. It's a cross shape known as the Northern Cross. It's a very, very prominent constellation. It's placed upon the Milky Way, which in the past would have been incredibly prominent. And on the Milky Way, it's the place where the Milky Way splits into two separate streams and creates this dark area down the center of it, which is called either the Great Rift or the Dark Rift. And the place where it splits, the northern opening of the Dark Rift, is where Cygnus is situated. And this group of stars marked the entrance and exit to the sky world for many cultures across the Eurasian continent. In fact, the more that we discover, the more we find that this was a universal concept, and that the northern sky was seen as a place of entry and exit to the sky world, what we now call heaven. And that these ideas go back not just to our own modern ancestors, but what's so interesting is that we know that the axis of the Earth wobbles across a period of around 26,000 years. It's known as the precessional cycle. And today, if we look into the sky, that the star that marks the turning point of the heavens is called Polaris. It's in the constellation of Ursa Minor. But in the past, at various times within this cycle, it's actually the stars of Cygnus. And this last occurred about 15,000 to 20,000 BC. But before that, one cycle earlier, the stars of Cygnus, the celestial swan, marked the center point of the sky, the turning point of the heavens, around which everything turned, at the exact time when our ancestors first connected with the Denisovans about 40 to 45,000 years ago. And I think this is highly significant because it's directly after this time that we start finding the symbols associated with the Cygnus constellation, particularly the swan becoming the symbol of the soul transmigrating from this world to the next. It becomes the symbol of the soul, not just before incarnation coming into this world, but returning back from whence it come, almost as if it's returning back to the source of original creation. And that's the other thing, is that around the world, is that the swan in particular is associated with cosmic creation. We find this in parts of Europe. We find it in India, within a Vedic tradition. We find it in ancient Egypt, where actually there it's a goose, but those two birds, the swan and the goose, are very closely linked. And we find it also in Native American tradition. For instance, the Cherokee have a tradition. Potential of Denisovan DNA amongst Native American tribes is amongst the Algonquin-speaking peoples of the Great Lakes, St. Lawrence River area. And that's very interesting because they have some incredible legends and myths relating to these very tall beings known as the Thunder People or the Thunderbirds, who would seem to have been giant shape-shifting birds that could take on anthropomorphic form. In other words, they could change from birds to humans. And the way that they did this was by removing their feather coats, and they could become, as like mortal beings. And I'm pretty certain, and I've written articles about these, and these can be read or accessed from my website, andrewcollins.com, that the Thunder People is a memory of the Denisovans and the Denisovan hybrids that actually occupied large parts of North America before our own ancestors came into North America and took over those same areas. And these Thunder People were much feared, incredibly feared, but not just because of their height, but they were also said to have incredible supernatural abilities. They could evoke the thunder and the lightning. They were terrible to gaze upon. But they had these incredible powers. They were also known as the Stone Giants as well. And they are linked with these Thunder People. And I'm certain that these myths and legends are the memories of the presence of the Denisovans and the Denisovan hybrids in North America thousands of years ago.
Andrew, you mentioned feathers. It almost sounds like a description of Quetzalcoatl.
Well, absolutely. I mean, we find all the way around the world that some of the most powerful wisdom bringers who, would seem to have been described in terms of like half serpents, half birds, would seem to, if you sort of tried to pin them down to almost like human form, would seem to have been powerful shamans. Shamans, of course, are those that can travel between this world and the next in an altered state of consciousness. But the ancients believed that the shamans could physically adopt the form of a bird and go between one world and the next. And this is exactly what it was said in association with the Thunder People. And what's so interesting is that the Thunder People were also linked very strongly with the constellation of Cygnus in Algonquin tradition. Particularly amongst the Ojibwa, the Thunderbird, as a mythical bird in its own right, was represented in the sky by the Cygnus constellation. So there's a direct relationship between these bird shamans that existed down on the ground with the constellation of Cygnus in the sky. In other words, they definitely saw thickness as the point of entry and exit into the sky world. And this is in North America. And these ideas are universal, as I said. They're not just in North America, but they're also all the way across the Eurasian continent. They're found at Göbekli Tepe, the key enclosures, the oldest, the most sophisticated cultures, enclosures at Göbekli Tepe are orientated towards the brightest star, Cygnus, which is Deneb. And these ideas were carried from Göbekli Tepe southwards through the Levant, through into North Africa, where around the end of the period of Göbekli Tepe, which is about 8,000 BC, a culture springs up at a place called Helwan, within sight of where eventually the Great Pyramid and its neighbours would be created. And here we find that these pyramids are also aligned to the constellation of Cygnus. There was a point to the southeast of the plateau that forms very specifically into the geometry of the plateau, where you would have been able to see the three wing stars of Cygnus.
We'll pick up on these points when we come back on the other side. Andrew Collins stays with us. Here are the Glorious Sons, shot off shotgun, taking us into the break here on Coast to Coast AM.